You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, TPC's March Around the World continues this Saturday evening, March the 9th, and we have four great guests from four different continents coming on the program tonight. But first, an all-time favorite and a dear friend of ours here and a dear friend to all of our people around the world, wherever you may be tuned in this evening. I'm James Edwards, joined now from the UK by Nick Griffin, the former member of the European Parliament, and so much more. He is back in the news in a big way in the UK. He's going to tell us the story all about it. We're going to get into some other issues as well, including a trip he took to Italy just a few days ago. A lot going on. He's a very busy man, and in some ways, the man of the hour right now for us in the UK. Nick, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, James. Great to be here, as always.
And it's great to have you, as always, and I was looking forward to this, and by God's good providence, we didn't get you last week, and since then, you've made even more news. You were on a trip last week, and so let's just start right there. The headline blares, as I have it on my notes here in the studio, if Galloway's triumph doesn't wake the elite from their slumbers, then what the hell will? And the story begins... It's been a long time since Nick Griffin tasted political success, and I would like to point out, number one, Nick Griffin's success was earth-shaking, certainly a precursor of things to come for our people, shockwaves around the world, and it was a lot more political success than this writer will ever taste, but nevertheless, this is how the story reads. If you follow me in Rochdale, get out and vote for George Galloway today, the former BNP leader tweeted. On the morning of Thursday's by-election, this is last Thursday. He's not perfect, Nick Griffin continued, but it's the best way by far to stick two fingers up the rotten political elite. The voters of Rochdale duly obliged, the Daily Mail continues, and a few hours later, Galloway was heading back to Parliament, courtesy of a resounding majority. Now Westminster is trying to come to terms with the implications of his victory. Nick, who is George Galloway, and why is this such a big problem for the elite?
George Galloway is a former member of the Labour Party, as a member of Parliament, who, basically being a hardcore traditionalist, actually genuinely pro-working class leftist, fell out a long time with the increasingly liberal and global corporate Labour Party, especially under Tony Blair. And he ended up as an independent, getting elected three times now to Parliament as an independent, mainly appealing to the Muslim vote in Muslim areas, and Rochdale, where he's just been elected again. He was elected primarily by the Muslim bloc vote, but also there's no doubt about it that a number of white working class voters did vote for him, helped his victory, and some of those did so because I said, look, grit your teeth and vote for Galloway because he's better than the rest of them. And as that quote from the Daily Mail, which is the now by far the biggest newspaper in Britain and certainly the most influential politically, that picked up the fact that I'd said to vote for him and that it made a difference. So it's, as you said, it's big news over here.
Well, it's bigger than that even, my friend. I mean, certainly you have a pretty coveted following on Twitter, now called X, of course, and tens of thousands of followers there you have. So, yes, I mean, it certainly made an impact, and it was one that was felt and one that they noticed. If we can, Liz, if you're ready on the other side of the wall, if we could play that first clip, the Nick Griffin clip number one. Let's take a listen.
Okay. Did you welcome the endorsement of Nick Griffin? Well, look, it's up to, you know, if people want to endorse, I mean, you can't kind of spurn endorsements or indeed control people who want to endorse.
Well, you can say if you're not comfortable with them. Nick Griffin describes himself on his X feed as being for freeing Palestine and also Britain from Zionist control. So did you welcome his endorsement for George Galloway in this contest?
Look, you're trying to damn George Galloway and the Workers' Party by association. It's up to people if they want to endorse.
You could distance yourself right now from Nick Griffin, but you're choosing not to do that.
Look, I'm not going to play your games. George Galloway.
Let's stop right there. I think, Nick, what was interesting there is not so much what he said, but what he didn't say. He didn't feed into that, and that is something you wouldn't have seen a decade ago. I mean, we saw this with Donald Trump. Somebody would endorse Donald Trump, and they would beg him for a denouncement, and he just wouldn't give it, and it sort of was trailblazing in a way. I don't know if this is a residual effect of that or if more people are just getting a little more confident. And what did you make of this?
It was something very significant. This was Galloway's chief operator, basically, as you heard there, refusing to do the easier thing, which was to condemn me. Galloway is, he always has been, anti-racist. He's actually now, in recent years, come round to the position that mass immigration is bad for the working class in Britain because it lowers wages, and it's bad for the countries from whom the immigrants come. Because we're taking very often their best, their brightest, their best educated. We're turning young doctors into dishwashers, and that this is bad news. So he has changed his position to a degree, but there's still a lot we wouldn't agree on. It would have been very easy for his man there to condemn me, and he didn't do, which I think is indicative of the way things that are shifting, and the fact that they're aware that to win more seats, this new, it's called the Workers' Party, it's not enough for them just to get Muslim votes. They have to peel off some of the white working class, and they recognise, I think, that my name and endorsement has still got a value there. So hence he didn't condemn me. So it's a really big move, actually. Now, the one remaining point here is that Galloway, he's also very, very firmly against the proposals of the entire British elite that in order to wage a crazed neocon war against Christian Russia, that we're going to have conscription in Britain. And out of the known names in British politics, it's basically only Galloway on one side and me on the other, saying no way, no conscription. If the elite want to fight a war, send their own sons, go themselves, but don't take our taxes, don't send our sons, let alone our daughters. So Galloway did suggest a couple of weeks ago when this was in the news, he said that this is such an important issue, we have to have the broadest possible coalition, and I don't care what anybody's politics or past is, if you agree on conscription, we must stand shoulder to shoulder and work together. So on X, I challenged him there and said, wonderful, I agree entirely. So, get in touch and let's work together. And on that, Galloway was absolutely silent. But the fact that his main man there refused to condemn me does suggest that this is shifting. So it's not so much where we are now, it's where this might take us in the not too distant future. And really, I found it very exciting. The other thing, perhaps people might be sort of wondering, well, why is Nick Griffin sort of hobnobbing with someone who's very closely allied with Muslims in Britain? So from a purely political reason, this is very, very important, because up until now, the Labour Party, your Democrats and worse, possibly, have basically regarded the Muslim bloc vote as theirs for the taking. And what's going on here with the Muslims leaving Labour and going off elsewhere to Galloway and to various independents because of the Gaza massacre and so on, it shows that we're shifting in Britain from the old class politics of conservative Labour to a new identitarian politics. And where the Muslims lead, others, including the white British, simply will have no choice but to follow. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
I think also, well, look, politics does make strange bedfellows sometimes, and sometimes there can be a common good even amongst different people and different cultures. Now, that being said, I think also what you're seeing here is what I have seen trends in America beginning to take shape, and that is you have now politicians and different spokesmen trying to keep up with where the base is and where the base is going. You have seen politicians here in the United States, up to and including setting United States members of Congress and former congressmen and nominees for the United States Senate on the Republican side, saying things that would be right at home with your career, Nick, and my career as a broadcaster. Yeah. And I think it's not because all of a sudden they became so much more courageous, but they are trying to keep up with the base. Now, I don't know, as an observer from the other side of the pond here in America, if that's necessarily what's going on in the Galloway camp, but I will guarantee you, and as you well know, as a seasoned politician, that they had to have a conversation. This just wasn't something that came up that he was ill-prepared for. There was a conversation to how to respond to this, and that's how he responded. And it was. Look, people would say, well, he should have endorsed Griffin or done this with Griffin. No, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I think this is, again, profound. And let's one more take on that, the response from the Galloway camp to your endorsement that moved the needle and got a lot of press right there on the eve in the 11th hour of the election.
Yeah, well, because the one thing I would like to say is that this wasn't an accident. You know, I didn't put that that tweet stroke X, you know, just out sort of off the top of my head or whatever. I thought about it. And I was sure that, so I was pretty sure Galloway was going to win. This is in a parliamentary by-election. So he's taken one of the 650 seats in the British Parliament, and it's for this town of Rochdale in northwest England. I was pretty sure he was going to win, and that if he won, the liberal elite in Britain would be desperate for a stick with which to beat him. So I simply handed him a stick. You know, there's a degree of cynicism. I knew what was going to happen. What I didn't expect, of course, was that it wouldn't just be the BBC and The Guardian who would pick this up, but also, as I imagine you're going to come on to with the next clip in a minute, but actually indeed, our Hindu Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. And that really was something I didn't expect, but it's truly wonderful.
A friend of ours here in the United States said that he loved Galloway's description of the much ballyhooed two-party system as two sides of the same buttocks. But let's play that second clip if we can. Liz, if you've got the MP4 clip, this will be Nick Griffin clip number two. Let's go.
And it is beyond alarming that last night the Rochdale by-election returned a candidate who dismisses the horror of what happened on October the 7th, who glorifies Hezbollah, and is endorsed by Nick Griffin, the racist former leader of the BNP.
Now, folks, that would be something we might have played it had it come from any hack in the British or international media community. That was actually the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. The Prime Minister, this was something profound enough in the UK to where it caught the ear of the Prime Minister, and he had to go on record to say his piece about it and make sure his denouncement was on the record. What did you make of that? I don't think when you sent that tweet, I may be wrong, I don't think you probably expected Sunak to comment on it, or did you?
No, exactly so. I was sure that it would attract comment in the press and so on. But I had no idea. It didn't occur to me that that our Prime Minister would pick it up. But that speech he made outside Number 10 Downing Street, it was a real panicked reaction of the elite. Firstly, to basically the Muslim bloc vote going absent without leave and started to think for themselves. Secondly, to the success of Galloway, because that puts, it's only one man, but it puts, he's a wonderful orator, actually. He's the best orator, I believe, that British politics has produced in 100 years. He really is something utterly special. And he's now in Parliament, and he's going to be speaking out against everything they're doing, from uncontrolled mass immigration, obviously particularly Gaza and supporting the Israeli genocide, which is what it is going on over there, and also speaking out against their plans for this crazed neocon war and conscription. And this is a really important thing, and they're panicking desperately about this because they know that they're trying to push something on the British people from a small incestuous political elite, which now they're trying to push a series of things on the Brits for which there is absolutely no public support, and against which there's a huge amount of public hostility. So they're really nervous about their entire political position, and this hysterical reaction to Galloway and to my endorsement of him just, you know, really sums that up.
All right, before we pivot to the next thing I want to talk about, two-part question. Number one, just for the benefit of our audience, I mean, you mentioned that it's somewhat of a mixed bag with Galloway, and you mentioned the good and the pros and some of the cons. On immigration, though, and immigration writ large, and by immigration, of course, we mean unchecked immigration from the third world. Where does he stand on that?
His position is that it's, although he's not racist, that mass immigration is bad for the white working, for the working class, because it lowers their jobs. There's not enough houses, not enough places in hospitals, etc., etc. And it's bad for the countries from whom the immigrants come, because in effect, it's the ultimate form of imperialism. I mean, instead of taking their raw materials, you go and you take their best brains, their best, brightest, dedicated youngsters. So he's against that. He's the only leftist who ever has been. And he's really something special. He's reminded, by the way, little anecdote. Many years ago, my man's long dead now, I was a friend of an old chap called Ron Creasy, who was the only councillor ever elected from Oswald Mosley's movement before the war, the British Union. And Creasy, he and I would sit drinking whiskey late into the night. I was only sort of 17, 18. And he taught me all sorts of things. One thing he said about the communists, and this might shock people, sort of especially in the States who are brought up to think of communists as the worst thing possible. He used to say, the thing with the communists, we'd fight them, but every now and again we'd get one and would come over and would join us. And they were always the best recruits, because with anyone else, conservatives or non-political, they only just begun to realise that there's a problem with the system. And what this old chap said to me, this very close friend of Mosley's, said the good thing about the communists, they'd already had the intelligence to realise that there was something very wrong with the system. The problem was they got the wrong answer. And once they saw that Mosley and, you know, British patriotism and then the British Union fascists was the right answer, they made the best people we ever got on our side.
Well, there is a book that goes around, and I have it at home, and it's I'm on the road tonight. I had a little meet and greet with some folks this weekend out of town, and we're doing the broadcast remotely. But it is a book that speaks on proper ways of leadership and organizing, and it is, again, from a former communist perspective, and it is probably the best book on organizing and leadership mm-hmm. that I've ever read. But all right, that being said, very quickly, what has happened since then? So you have Rishi Sunak, if I'm pronouncing that right, Prime Minister of the UK. He's denouncing you, denouncing Galloway for not denouncing you, so on and so forth. And so big news, this is last week. What has gone on the last couple of days? I would imagine, like most news cycles, this has died down a little bit, but I'm still sure you're riding a crest to some extent. Has anything else happened or developed behind the scenes as a result of all of this?
I've been contacted again on Twitter X. Oh, one thing, by the way, on Twitter, it's very interesting that for the last 5 years at least, if you search Google for Nick Griffin Twitter or Nick Griffin X, straight away it came up with me and my latest quotes and all the rest of it, latest tweets. And basically at the very same time that Sunak made that speech, that was changed so that now if you search Google high and low, you'll find no reference to my X feed. So they obviously thought, whoa, with this publicity, we want to kill this, because my X feed had sat at 34,000 for many years. The last 3-4 months, it's gone up to 56,000. And that's despite the fact there's a shadow ban on it. You know, so there really are things are shifting in a big, big way. And especially there's so many Muslims in Britain now getting in touch with me saying, now I was brought up fearing and hating you and everything you stood for, but now I see what you're saying, and really you're right. And more these people are saying that the thing with us living here is that your society is so sick with, you know, for instance, the LGBT obsession and forcing it on school kids and so on. It's so sick that really we'd like to get out of here. But while your country and America and NATO are bombing our countries and you've got us under embargoes and you've got your rotten, usurious banking system, the fiat money system ripping us all off, while that's going on, how can we? But that really we need to sit down and do some sort of sensible deal. And time and time again, they're saying to me what I've been saying for years, you get out of our countries and we'll get out of yours. And this, again, it's not something happening now, but it's a really important thing shaping up, I think, for the future.
Nick, I didn't want to ask this question because we're running out of time, but I just saw it on my notes, so I guess I will. And this could, again, just be rhetorical hyperbole coming from an overanimated so-called reporter, but someone had written, and I had read this in researching for this, that this Galloway's election is the biggest body blow to the establishment in 30 years. I mean, that seems a little bit of an exaggeration, but why are they saying this? I mean, I guess you've covered it, but...
Yeah, I think it is. It's the big, and the blow the blow before that was the development and the electoral success, relatively speaking, of the British National Party. So it is a big body blow because it's someone come along, really the two-party system with occasionally the Liberal Democrats as the third party, They had the whole thing sewn up. And this has blown it wide open and shows that it's blown wide open. The other thing being very interesting was as this happened, this huge swing to Galloway on a very, very low turnout. So actually most people, the majority, only just over a third of people even bothered to vote. So 65% of people have just decided, you know what, voting's not going to change anything, I'm not going to bother. Which you can take as a sign of apathy and stupidity, but it's not. These are people who've made a conscious decision. They've understood, actually, that the system is entirely rigged. The voting isn't going to change anything. This is partly, of course, because the Brits in enormous numbers, by a very significant majority, voted for a Brexit, which the entire political elite then conspired to deliver in name only. So they've taught a huge, millions of British voters that actually there's no point. And I think probably the most interesting thing that's going on in Britain at present isn't even the Galloway thing, any of that. It's the fact that the farmers of Britain, just like the farmers of France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Poland, America beginning as well, are really getting militant and starting to block food deliveries, etc. And if necessary, to go and push and shove with the police. And we're beginning to face, I think, something which you can start to see at the end of this line, actually revolutionary change. Because as I don't tire of telling people in Britain, we need a revolutionary change. You don't get revolutionary change through an electoral system which the elite control. You get revolutionary change when people move outside that, which is why when the Western elite, for instance, wants a coloured revolution in Ukraine, they don't do the ballot box. They have a Maidan. They have thousands of people out confronting the police and chasing the government out of town. And that is the only way our people are going to be saved, including in the United States. I've no doubt we'll talk about the coming election there and Trump and so on in due course later in the show. But more to say on that in due course then.
We are going to get to that after the break. We are skipping the breaks with Nick to maximize our time with him. Still some other fantastic guests coming up. We are going to visit leaders and spokesmen all around the world this month. That's what we're doing. We were in Croatia and Canada last week. Tonight, obviously, right now in the UK. In the next hour, we will visit Canada once again. Big news there going on with the so-called online harms bill. We're going to dip down into Brazil and then in the third hour head over to Australia. All tonight, four guests, four different continents. But, Nick, we have about a minute, a little bit more than a minute before we have to take this hard break. You've been doing a little traveling yourself. Can you give us a 60-second summation on your recent trip to Italy? What were you doing down there?
Yes, I was over there. It's very good development. There's a nationalist alternative university which is established, and it's particularly being run in Rome by my very old comrade Roberto Fiore. So I was over there lecturing at their latest long weekend seminar, and it's connected to this isn't some sort of flim-flam thing. It's actually properly connected to a patriotic inclined, I think mainly Catholic, university in Poland, which offers degrees and so on, and certificates for people who attend this alternative nationalist university operation. So in terms of producing educated cadres for the future, I think it's quite important. And I was there giving three lectures this time. It's the second one I've done of these. I was there a couple of months ago, and I'm back in about another month's time. So it's very good to see young people really keen to learn and being taught things that are really in depth.
Well, and it's good to have people like you there to help shepherd them along. So, and you are seeing, I am telling you this, I'm here in Knoxville, Tennessee tonight doing a remote broadcast, and I have met just some of the most incredible young people just here in this collection. Young people are much sharper, much more developed, much more articulate now, it seems, than it certainly any that I can remember when I was that age. And in fact, when I myself was that age, I wasn't nearly as far along as they are now. They are very well-versed and very determined, and there is something coming up
from the
generation 10, 20 years younger than I am now in my mid-40s that is very impressive, and they will be heard from before this thing is said and done. But not before we come back with Nick Griffin. And by the way, he's making good trouble, as they used to say here in the United States, on X and really everywhere he goes. At Nick Griffin BU is his handle on the former Twitter, at Nick Griffin BU. Join tonight. We'll be right back with him.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters.
As if our democracy is on the line, because it is. We must reelect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
You're listening to First Lady Jill Biden as she warms up the crowd in Philadelphia ahead of the president's speech there Friday.
MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump want to pass a national ban on the right to choose, period. Well, take it seriously, folks, because that's what they're heading for. Hear me loud and clear. This will not happen on my watch.
Former President Trump taking to his social media platform, Truth Social, to weigh in on Biden's State of the Union address.
Joe Biden's sad excuse for a State of the Union address aside, here are the facts. When I left office, we gave Joe Biden the most secure border in U.S. history. We gave him Remain in Mexico, very tough to get, but I got it. Safe Third Agreements, the asylum ban, Title 42, 571 miles of border wall, rapid deportations, and much more. We had the safest border in the history of our country. As soon as he got in, Crooked Joe and his radical left lunatics deliberately dismantled each and every one of those policies that were so good.
In other news, the Justice Department is resisting Hunter Biden's efforts to have tax charges against him thrown out. USA's John Schaefer on the story.
Hunter Biden, son of the president, contends that they lack legal merit and stem from a conspiracy theory, as per court documents. His legal team asserts that the case ought to be dropped due to the alleged unlawful appointment of special counsel David Weiss and the continued validity of the plea agreement between Weiss and Biden. The argument is similar to one former President Trump is using in his own special counsel declaration.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer. And again, airfare.
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airlines. Travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of the Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net. Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com. Ladies and gentlemen, back with Nick Griffin, the man of the hour for our people in the UK. And, well, his career speaks for itself. Judge a man by his enemies. If you do that, Nick's going to come out ahead every time. And you're welcome. But this is, again, tremendous. Within the last week, been denounced by the sitting, the occupier of the seat of the prime minister there in the UK, and for all the right reasons. We've been playing that song. Keith Alexander is not with me tonight as I'm on the road, my normal co-host Nick, as you know, and he said, you got to play this song for Nick tonight. But that was actually, if you look that song up on YouTube, it has the band in the studio performing it, and in a split screen it has street scenes of 1967 London. London in 1967 when that song came out. And that's the reason we're playing it tonight. We're going to pivot into a talk about immigration here in this last half of the interview with Nick Griffin. But you look at 1967 London, and you wouldn't even think you were in the same planet, Nick, much less the same city.
No, indeed not. I was born, it breaks my heart to go to London. It's the capital city of my country. I was born there, brought up there till the age of eight. And in 1967, my parents saw what was coming, and they got out when they could, and they moved to a rural part of, you know, the country, some way away from London. But still, if I've had a few drinks and so on, I get a bit of a London accent, and I'd be at home there. But I'm not anymore, because I'm a foreigner in my city. And it really is grim. And as you say, you look back, it's really a very short time. I know perhaps to someone perhaps age 20 or whatever, you know, they think that, oh, the 1960s, it's a long, long time ago. It's not, you know. Not really. It's a blink of an eye. And for the place to change so quickly from where there was just a couple of little suburbs which were ethnic and notorious for being so. And it's gone in the late 1950s, it's gone from that to the native Brits being an absolute minority in the capital city of our country. It's a terrible thing. And it's getting worse very rapidly. So there's a lot of fuss in Britain, as there is, I know, in America, about illegal migrants gatecrashing the borders. And in America, they do it mainly through Mexico. In Britain, they do it mainly visibly by taking very dangerous little boats, rubber boats, across the English Channel, which is 22 miles from France. But while last year there was about 30,000 of those, and everyone's looking at that, the Conservatives gave 1.4 million visas. Bear in mind, our population is much smaller than yours. 1.4 million visas were given to immigrants from the third world to come in quite legally. You know, these are staggering numbers from a government which says it wants to get a grip on immigration. You know, it certainly doesn't. It's completely out of control. And I get the impression that all over the Western world, the elite are trying to finish the job they've started in a really short time because they know that their time's running out.
Well, I hope so. And I will tell you this, immigration is the issue. It is the issue now. I mean, it always has been. But now more so than ever, you are seeing it really just take shape in ways that I couldn't have fathomed having done this my entire adult life. what you're seeing now here in the United States and in other places as well, you're seeing immigration become the issue. And even politicians and even conservative media heads, conservative incorporated, as we call them here in the United States, they are saying things using the term the Great Replacement, which is exactly what it is, in no uncertain terms. And again, a lot of these people who were just, you know, one tier below the establishment system media, they would have never said that, that they were these kosher conservatives and, you know, they're colorblind conservatives. And all of that. But now they're using these terms and saying things that they would have kicked people out and, in fact, did kick people out of their own gatherings for just 4 or 5 years ago for saying. So there is movement on this issue. And I guess I'm wondering why all of a sudden this has reached a critical mass. Is it because the people are moving that we've become boxed in? Even a rat will fight when its back is against the wall. I mean, what has happened to have, you know, I don't believe that the courage has just manifested within these weaklings in 4 years, but for whatever reason, and it doesn't matter to me what that is necessarily, as long as they are doing and saying the things that we need them to do and say, and they are. What? How do you figure that, Nick?
I think there's two factors. One is very good. The other is very bad. On the good side, it's the fact that the public have reached, they're beyond the end of their tether.
Yes.
The politicians and the media people, they can see the risk of losing control of this completely. So partly they are, some of them, you know, they are human beings, and just as other people around them have woken up to what you and I were saying a long time ago, so they've woken up to a degree themselves. But mainly they sense the public mood has shifted so far, they've got to try and keep up with it, or at least be seen to be keeping up with it. Otherwise, they lose all credibility, and there's a possibility the public will go and do something truly terrible, like vote for, you know, a George Galloway or a Nick Griffin or James Edwards. So they can't be having that. But that's the good side. There's a genuine shift of public mood and so on that they have to reflect. The bad side is that most, certainly in Britain, most of the criticism of immigration, although the British as a whole are just sick of all of it, but particularly with the Africans, who are staggeringly badly behaved compared with anybody else, is that the establishment criticism of immigration continually comes from people who are ultra-Zionist, who are focusing attention against Muslims, and they're trying to create Suella Braverman, who's was a key figure in the Conservative government until very recently. She's a Hindu herself, like Sunak, but she's married to a Jew. She's got two children. They brought up Jewish, and they're ultra Zionist. The family on husband's side are in the Israeli Defense Force, etc., etc. And these people, they want the clash of civilizations. They quite literally want a civil war in Britain and Europe and elsewhere, because they think that'll force our people to absolutely side with Israel, and in particular side with what they really want, which is a war against Iran. So they're deliberately now whipping up hatred of immigrants, and especially hostility to the Muslim community. And we've got problems with the Muslims in Britain, and no two ways about it. And they've got problems with us. But they're now artificially whipping up this hatred because they want us at each other's throats so that they can manipulate us all the better.
All right, let's stick with immigration as we continue on in an hour that's going by far too quickly. I keep looking at the clock. No, not this late already. Nick, we love you. And we have, you and I did an interview together for the American Free Press newspaper last fall. And I recently obtained the rights to put that out online, which we have done. If you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight, ladies and gentlemen, in advance of Nick's appearance this evening, I posted the Q&A, the print Q&A that we did for American Free Press late last year. And I'm just going to read one excerpt from that as we continue this conversation. And I asked Nick in the Q&A, what is the greatest concern your part of the world faces today, talking about the U.K.? And his answer, the demographic crisis. This is not code for mass third world immigration. That is, of course, a major part of the problem. But it is vital to understand that this civilization-wrecking disaster has a flip side to it. Mass-colored immigration only exacerbates the even deeper problem of our collective failure to breed. Even without their full cradles, our empty ones would spell disaster. Put together, the two trends are creating the most devastating of catastrophes which are converging on a civilization that is running out of road. Nick, you later continued in another question by writing, strange faces, strange tongues, strange faiths, and strange customs, coupled with surges in crime, poverty, and alienation, to make our streets uncomfortable places that are no longer British in any way except the underlying architecture. Nobody could have put it better. I encourage everyone to read the full transcript of that interview. It's up tonight. I think we posted it a couple of days ago at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Nick, are more politicians beginning to see this? Do you envision a day or any set of circumstances to where that kind of language from a sitting politician will not be uncommon?
I think we're already seeing it, basically. But most of it's only language when they speak about it. They will That's not right. do anything about it. And as a matter of fact, they really can't do anything about it. It's too late to sort this problem out. It's as simple as that. Yes. Not without a worldwide change when, as I said before, you have a worldwide sit-down and grown-up talk between their world and our world, and we look at these different places and work out how we can get it so that, you know, a lot of them want to go home and go home. But at that stage, you know, Britain has a catastrophe quite separate from that. Our population is falling like a stone, and it's going to fall even faster because it's not just the last 10 years we haven't had enough children. It goes back decades now, and we now are in like Japan and South Korea. We're in a civilization wrecking catastrophe because the fiat money banking system and the consumer capitalist system, they have to have growth.
Let's skip this break.
Or they collapse. And it's coming to an end.
All right, Nick, I mean, do you see, though, it is coming to an end. And you said, even in that print Q&A, you said it earlier tonight, and you said it beautifully a few appearances ago. We have you on regularly, of course, but I can't remember exactly which appearance this was. But you said that there is no parliamentary road to revolution. It doesn't mean that time for our people has passed, but that time has passed. And you worded it much more eloquently than I did when you said that. And there is a future for our people. It's just not absolutely the future through the existing system.
Yeah, absolutely so. There is a future for our people. I've no doubt of that whatsoever. The only question is, are we going to have what the neocons and the Zionists now clearly want, and what the hardcore Islamists, who are not all Muslims by any means, the hardcore Islamists want? They want this clash of civilizations in our streets. They want a bloody civil war. Now, if we get a bloody civil war, it'll go on for 30 years. At the end of those 30 years, neither side will win. At the end of it, they'll sit down, they'll have some kind of peace deal, and they'll basically sort of partition the country up. But we could perhaps get to that by negotiation and discussion without the civil war. And that's now the best we can get in Britain. I think the United States is completely different. The United States is big enough to split up, and everyone's going to be fussed about is Donald Trump.
But that's what we're advocating for. I really hope a secession. Yeah. I really hope
I think you're heading that way because, let's face it, either Trump is going to win, which I'd have said 2 years ago was impossible. Now it's not. If he's going to win, all hell will break loose, and he will disappoint the people who voted for him next time even more than he did last time. As a matter of fact, he's still probably marginally better than the other side. But if he wins, all hell's going to break loose and they're going to try and get rid of him. They'll probably assassinate him. Even though he's there now for an Israeli war, he's still not going to deliver all sorts of other things that the left want. So they'll want to get rid of him. Hell will break loose. If he loses, all hell is going to break loose. And in either case, it won't make any difference to the general trajectory of the United States of America, which is now a doomed civilization, a doomed way of doing things. But if out of that you get a free and independent, doesn't matter whether it's the whole of the South, just Texas, or half of Texas, it's bigger than half the countries of Europe, it's enough for our people
Amen.
And our culture and our faith to survive. That's what people need to concentrate on.
You know, Nick, it's amazing to hear you say that because I have not, I don't think, had this conversation with you one-on-one individually, but I've had it with so many people. Just last week I was talking with a regular guest on this program, and I said, is it better for us if Trump wins? I mean, he is better than Biden on these issues, but all of our people are going to go back to sleep. Is it better that if we just ratchet up the the inevitable with Biden. And he said it's really good for us either way, because what we need is chaos and instability, and we need to grow the amount of political discontent and the rancor. And if Trump wins, for the reasons you stated, Nick, that is going to happen. And if he loses, the Democrats are going to stack the Supreme Court. They're going to come down hard. Either way, I think America is marching toward some sort of a balkanization. And if not, there is no future for our people on this continent. There is no there will never be a United States, all 50 states as we currently see it on the map, where it's one people, one faith. That's long gone. That's over.
Yeah,
there is
absolutely
a future for our people on this continent, but not as it currently exists. There's going to have to be a separation. And I think the political stress level will be exacerbated whether Trump or Biden wins. Either way, it's going to increase. And I think, I hope that's where we're heading. I hope it's not false hope. I've lost a lot of my naivete. I have a unblemished track record of defeats and setbacks, so I don't think I'm naive. But that's what I'm hoping for. Now, that being said, I want to get to a couple of things from our mutual friend Philip DeWinter. But I want to ask you this, just your opinion. This is just off the top of my head. I have this theory, and I don't know if it's realistic or if it's fool's gold. But do you see any sort of a future under any set of circumstances where, you know, you look at the woke left and they've given so much of themselves over to abortion and homosexuality and so-called transgenderism? They're not reproducing. They're reproducing certainly at a much lesser level than our people, conservatives, whatever you want to call us. Do you see any sort of future? You know, in fact, the only way liberals reproduce is through the public education system. I mean, that's it. So do you see any sort of future where, you know, this whole age of wokeism is really only a few decades old, that they just really implode and destroy themselves and the fundamentalists inherit the earth?
Absolutely so. And partly because this revolution will devour itself. You see it now with the increasing thing, which is becoming a civil war between the LGB on one side and the T on the other, and especially between the lesbians and the feminists and the trans freaks. So it's doing itself damage that way. But most of all, there's very clear evidence that religiosity and even political positions are largely inherited. And as you say, these people simply aren't having kids. And on the other hand, on average, our population aren't. But all over the Western world, there's little pockets very quietly going on of mainly traditionalist Christians and occasionally sort of, you know, right-wing pagan types who aren't the worst of everybody. But especially primarily the traditionalist Christians, whether it's fundamentalist Protestants or hardline Tridentine Catholics, and they're just quietly in little communities having lots of kids. And actually, certainly in Britain, in recent, everyone used to say, oh, the Muslims are outbreeding us. They still are, but not much. Their population, their birth rate is crashing as well. And the Hindus likewise, that there's fundamentalist Muslims are breeding like rabbits. But and they're breeding faster than us. But there's more fundamentalist Christians than there are fundamentalist Muslims, and they're breeding pretty well. So that side of the population is increasing. Likewise, fundamentalist Jews. So, 30, 40, 50 years' time, because of the geometric effects of population change, our countries are going to be increasingly dominated by religious fundamentalist Christian people. And whatever the actual difference between the two groups is, you can get what the balance is, you can guarantee that our population is going to be much more comprised of and influenced by people like us in the future, because we're the ones having children.
I think that we might not be able to see that far ahead right now, because we look at our current state of despair, but there's a lot of things that have changed in the last 4 or 5 years, positive trends, positive trajectory that I've seen, that I say, you know what, hey, it ain't over yet. And then I'm looking at it, I'm like, these people sure aren't having kids. So I don't know, if we can pull enough of our kids out of public schools, we might have a shot at this thing. But you have laid out the course in that aforementioned American Free Press interview that we did. And by the way, again, read it tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org. 10-part Q&A with Nick Griffin. Timeless. It was published last year, late last year, but all of the questions are still current. So, I asked you in that interview, what are some common sense solutions that could be implemented tomorrow if there was a political will to do so? You answered shut the borders, re-immigration, a program to raise our birth rate, which is what we're talking about right now, a concerted effort to restore confidence in and love for our native British culture and values, because of course they've taught us to hate ourselves and hate everything our ancestors were and stood for.
Absolutely so. You mentioned something before, James, about getting kids out of the public school system. That's absolutely critical. There's no point having lots of extra children if you then leave them to watch the mainstream television, leave them unsupervised on the internet, let them listen to the music, in inverted commas, pumped out by the usual suspects around the music industry, and put them in the public school system. You will lose them. It's as simple as that. You've got to have children, but also then protect them, shield them, guard them from the madness, the sheer evil of this society around us. It's a satanic level of evil.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you have kids and you turn them over to the system to raise them, well, how do you think they're going to turn out? Well, I mean, you know,
exactly.
Every single one, but I mean, it's, you know, you put them at a disadvantage.
Generally, you will lose them. This is a thing, and there's this old thing, and I've heard some nationalists say to me, oh, well, I don't bring my kids up with my views, because if you force your views on them, they'll rebel against it. that's the liberal argument. And if the liberals believe that, they wouldn't have 24/7 multiracial anti-white propaganda on every TV channel, in every school book, in every school room. They know the old thing, Jesuits saying of so bends the twig, so grows the tree. They know that how children are brought up does make a difference. And if you bring them up our way, you will lose one or two here and there, obviously, but you won't lose most of them. And that's an absolutely critical thing.
Always
have kids
exceptions.
And rear them right.
Exactly. No, Nick, you are. And there's always exceptions to the rule. Nothing has 100% success rate. But people ask me, I am raising my kids to believe exactly how I believe. And however it turns out, it'll turn out. But I'm pretty confident that it's going to go our way. And certainly, we're giving them a better chance. I have a 13-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old son, and a 3-year-old daughter. But certainly, I mean, I think I'm putting them on a better path than they would be otherwise. And I have no doubt that it's going to go our way. And this is how you rear children and generations and civilization, by extrapolation. But I was, folks, again, I'm going to plug it one more time. This is... to check out the interview that Nick and I did for American Free Press up at our website tonight, I asked Nick the question, what's next for Nick Griffin? Check it out. It is a great answer. I was going to ask you, Nick, we're going to post this next week, a similar interview. I think it was the very next one I did after you, Nick, with Philip DeWinter. You, of course, former member of the European Parliament, Philip DeWinter, still in the Flemish Parliament in Belgium. How do we get more people like Philip in office throughout Europe?
It's happening anyway, just as a general trend. So the thing that's really worrying the elite in the liberal elite in Europe present is the alternative for Deutschland, the alternative for Germany, which is they're not us, James. They're not us. They're very, very soft and careful. Lots of them are pro-Zionist. A lot of them are civic nationalists. As long as they speak German and salute the German flag, I don't care what they are and all the rest of it. But there's, when you elect 10 of those, you get one of them who's actually a proper nationalist, albeit a little bit concealed, and a couple of others who really do lean our way. And that's it. It's just this overall trend. The thing is, you've hinted at it earlier on a little while ago, that there's these enormous changes, but we're too close to them. If you've been in America when it was just British colonies and seen some fellas throwing boxes of tea into the water at Boston, you wouldn't, there and then, you'd have thought, oh, well, that's interesting. You wouldn't have understood, because you couldn't possibly, that that's a critical, crucial point.
In world history.
For what's about to happen, exactly, in world history. And we're in that position. We're so close to it. We're right in it. We can't possibly see what are the really significant things and what are the things which actually will be forgotten. But what you can be sure is that there are really significant things going on now. And it's not the victory, or not the victory, because they won't be allowed. The alternative for Deutschland will be banned before they're allowed to come anywhere near power. And there's a problem that keep.
And you're seeing a lot of that with a lot of the nationalist parties throughout Europe.
Yeah, they all get banned. The Vlaams Bloc was, Golden Dawn was, the Slovaks of Labour were. And the problem is they're all thinking politics, the political process changes everything. No, it doesn't. It registers changes. And if you want to come to power through politics, you've also got to have the power, whether it's through trade unions or having members in who are very strong in the electricity system or whatever. You've got to have the ability, if the elite play dirty against you, you've got to have the ability to bring the whole country to a standstill. It's as simple as that. So you've got to have truckers and farmers on your side. And if the elite just come around and turn out to shoot you, you've got to have the ability, or the cause has to have the ability, to put huge numbers of young, fit, able, armed men on the streets. Because political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. It's as simple as that. And while these people are fixated on elections, they are cruising for a terrible bruising.
We're at our last minute, and I have been involved in this since I was 19 years old. I'll be 44 years old this summer. I'm more hopeful now than I ever have been, Nick. I don't know if I'm like Baghdad Bob, the Iraqi Minister of Information, who was talking about how they were winning the war while American tanks were rolling in the background. But 10 seconds, Nick, do you feel as though, hey, we could turn this around? I think I know your answer. Final word to you, Nick Griffin.
I've no doubt there's exciting times, and at the end of it, our people will be on top in the countries that our forefathers loved and built.
And when that happens, my friend, a monument to you to replace the